So there was violent reaction to the draft, and then there was the less violent reaction of simply fleeing to Canada or somewhere else. Many others feigned illnesses. Some actually mutilated themselves. They would cut off a trigger finger. They would shoot off toes. They would knock out teeth. You had to be able to bite a cartridge if you were a Civil War soldier to get the end of it off and pour the powder down. There's one story about a member of the Ohio legislature who found a note on his desk saying that he had been drafted. He immediately went home and knocked all his teeth out, came back and found out some of his friends had put the note on his desk as a joke, and he hadn't been drafted at all. My point is that there is in the North, as there was in the South, resistance to the draft, a wide-scale resistance. The scope of opposition suggests that huge numbers of men must have been affected by the draft, but only 46,000 Northern men were drafted directly into service. 46,000 out of more than 2 million who served. Another 118,000 for any substitutes, for a total of 162,000 men contributed directly or indirectly by the draft. That's about 6% of all those who served. But during the period of the draft, from the spring of 1863 to the spring of 1865, nearly a million men volunteered for Union service. Many of them, perhaps most of them, lured by the offer of bounties of varying amounts. So while the draft might appear on the surface to be a failure, it actually did stimulate a great deal of volunteering and largely accomplished its purpose. Those 2.1 or 2.2 million soldiers who served in the Union Army, as we've seen earlier, represented just about 1 in 2 of the military age white population in the North, a much smaller percentage than in the South. Remember again the influence of slavery in that regard to free up the white men to fight in the South. Now, the North never did follow the South's lead in keeping veterans in service for the duration. They never took that final step to make sure that they had soldiers in the ranks. This meant that at any given time, there was probably a higher proportion of veterans in the Confederate armies than in the Union armies, which was a distinct advantage for the Confederates on the battlefield. One other difference between the two armies is worth mentioning. The South tended to replace losses in original regiments. So if your regiment has 500 men and it suffers 150 casualties in one season of campaigning, many of those men would often be replaced in that same regiment to bring it back up to strength. So there was always a core of veterans present in these Confederate regiments to show the newcomers the ropes and steady them in battle. The North, in contrast, tended to bleed its units right down virtually to extinction and then simply raise new regiments. The enlistments of whole regiments often ended at the same time. Sometimes whole regiments would pass out of Union service and new regiments would come in to replace them. This meant that there would be green regiments or even brigades in Union service quite late in the war, which would have been extremely unusual on the Confederate side. These men would have seen very little service, and they might not function as effectively as their Southern counterparts. There are many instances of these new units in the Northern Army being butchered on battlefields where they came up against more veteran Confederate units. Because group identity and spirit in units was important, the Confederate practice of constantly putting new men in with the veterans worked very well. It helped keep those regiments effective in battle. It helped have a nice leavening of veteran soldiers with these new men who came in. Once men were in the ranks, once you had these soldiers in the ranks, the two nations, of course, had to find the fiscal resources to arm them and to equip them and to feed them. The war demanded national spending on an absolutely unprecedented scale in American history to achieve these goals. It extended the resources of the Confederacy right to the breaking point to arm and clothe and feed its soldiers. The North managed to do so more effectively. Our next lecture will look at the ways in which each side sought to finance the war, and we'll look at the relative success and failure they had in giving the soldiers all they needed to fight and campaign.